The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Miranda Ballantyne. Miranda is the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Installations, Environment, and Energy, Headquarters U.S. Air Force, Pentagon. Ms. Ballantyne is responsible for the oversight, formulation, review, and execution of plans, policy, programs, and budget for installations, energy, environment, safety, and occupational health. Welcome, Miranda.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Miranda, let's just start with your role today. I mean, that is quite a title. Can you describe to us what you do in that role as Assistant Secretary?
Yeah, hearing you describe my job, I thought, my gosh, what the heck do I do anyway? Well, let me tell you, I'm in charge of really all things related to Air Force bases. So that has to do with housing, facilities, military construction projects, environmental issues such as environmental cleanup, endangered species issues, as well as all things related to energy at the Air Force.
That's got to be a fascinating job because there's always changes. If you start back with the BRAC initiatives and closing down a bunch of bases, I mean, how do you keep up with it all?
By having a great team is the short story. We just have a fabulous team who leads all different types of efforts. And it is a really difficult time, especially in the current budgetary environment, I would say is the biggest challenge at the moment. Not enough resources spread too thin. Familiar story to anyone who works in the federal government.
Absolutely. What are some ways that those budget cuts have impacted your job and user customer of the airmen and women?
I would say the biggest way that the budget challenges have affected my portfolio really just has to do with how we take care of our facilities. So we have cut dramatically the amount of money that's going into sustaining, maintaining, and recapitalizing our facilities. For example, this year, our major commanders submitted 500 top priority projects that needed to be completely rebuilt, and we were only able to fund 30 of them. So that means literally hundreds of buildings that need to be knocked down and rebuilt, we're just not getting to this year.
So this is going to be the wrong analogy. I keep thinking robbing Peter to pay Paul, kicking the can down the road, there's some sort of analogy that works for that.
Tell you what it is. It's a penny wise and a pound foolish.
Penny wise and pound foolish. Exactly. Yeah. That's it, right? Because you're saving money now, but isn't it just going to cost more later when you have to address those issues and now all of a sudden it's in a crisis situation?
You got it. And unfortunately, those are the decisions we're having to make pretty intentionally. And it is for good reason. Our secretary in chief, who ultimately make the budgetary trade-offs, are the ones who are really looking at the overall budgetary environment and saying, how can we ensure that we have the right funds placed at the right places and not negatively impacting our readiness? We want to make sure that any airmen we're sending off into a combat situation or a mission situation is ready for that situation. And we're not negatively impacting the modernization of our weapons system. So we really need to stay ahead of our adversaries in ensuring we have the best, most modern weapons system. So these are intentional decisions to take risk, as we call it, in our facilities portfolios.
Miranda, that's fascinating. Your job must be very interesting every single day. But I'm going to take a step back now and start from the beginning here. Let's talk about the beginning of your journey. Let's begin with your background. Where are you from?
I'm from Michigan and Colorado, but I call Colorado home.
Virtually all the successful women we speak to had a big influence growing up. Who was yours?
Well, I'll tell you, I had a lot of them. But if I had to choose one person who most influenced me, I would have to say it was my grandfather. I come from Italian immigrant grandparents. My grandfather and grandmother came over to this country literally in the bottom of a boat. My grandfather had a third grade education and came to this country $5 in debt, the cost of his ticket, speaking no English whatsoever. When he landed here, he kissed the ground and said, "America mia." This was his country. And he worked hard, as most immigrants do. He worked very hard, multiple jobs, in order to afford his children and his grandchildren like me the opportunity for the good education that I got and the wonderful career opportunities that I've had. So I very much have that immigrants work hard, work ethic, and commitment to this country. And I feel like I owe this country everything for what I've got.
That's what made America great and continues to make America great is that melting pot. And my parents also came over. We should check out when they passed through Ellis Island. Who knows? We may be relatives.
Could be.
What was the best advice he ever gave you? I mean, that was true grit that had to take somebody who didn't speak English or even people who actually migrate to the U.S. today and come to a country with nothing and then build, obviously, a very strong family and a successful career.
You know, I can't say that he ever gave me words of wisdom in words so much as in a role model, as somebody to watch. And my grandmother as well. And just watching how hard they worked, they saved every penny, paid for everything in cash. Very different from the way we pay for things today. Didn't borrow money even to buy their houses or their cars. So it was more by example, I would say, than words of wisdom or catchphrases.
Did they have multiple children?
One.
Wow.
Only one. My grandfather came from a family of 15 and made a very conscious decision to give one child everything he could. So my mother is an only child.
Did your mother pursue a career?
She did. So she was a school librarian. She chose a career that would allow her to balance her work and being home at 3 o'clock with her kids. So that's what she did. To this day, she's got a room full of children's books and puppets and all kinds of things. My kids adore going to her house.
And so, Miranda, what did you study when you went to college?
My undergraduate degree is in psychology. I studied neuropsychology, so not sort of the psychology you would typically think of. I did a lot of experimentation, running rats through mazes and dissecting human brains, not live ones, I mind you, and that type of thing. So a little bit more of the hard sciences, actually.
Tell us a little bit about that, you know, why you decided to study that and then how you moved into a different field.
Well, no kidding. If you had asked me back then, would I have ever imagined that I would go to work for Walmart, the Fortune number one company in the world, or the Air Force or the military at all, I probably would have laughed and said, are you crazy? Of course not. That's not even in my thinking for my future path. So my path, like many people's paths, was varied and in many ways unpredictable. So after undergrad, I wasn't convinced enough that being in the laboratory environment was where I wanted to be. I wasn't convinced enough that I was ready to go into a PhD or MD program, which is really what you need to do in the field that I was in. So I frankly just decided to take some time off. And I worked in retail like many young people do, you know, started out minimum wage like many young people do, and discovered that A, I loved the retail industry, which I was surprised about, and B, that I loved business, which I was also surprised about. And so it all sort of evolved from there. I so enjoyed working in the business community that I just kind of continued working in business until I moved to Washington. I was always very passionate about the environment. Growing up in Colorado, I had a lot of environmental education as a youngster. So I was always very passionate about the environment. And when I moved to Washington, I decided to take a different track and go and work for an environmental nonprofit. And that was a big turning point in my career because it was the first time I started working in clean energy. And really all the rest of my career from that point on has been in the energy space.
So we'll talk a lot more, I think, about your early jobs. But I think it's so interesting that you knew that you didn't know for sure that you wanted to pursue psychology. And so you decided to just work and see what you enjoyed. I think one of the things that we see a lot with younger people today is that they believe that they need to have their whole career mapped out. I know my daughter, Aileen, and I both have children, and my daughter goes through what she describes as an existential crisis about every 6 months where she thinks at 24 she should know what she wants to do. And so it's great to hear stories like that because I always tell her, I think the best way you learn is just by doing different things and you learn what you like and you don't like.
Absolutely. And I think that's such an important note that for some people, a straight logical career path really does work and makes a lot of sense. But for many, many others, the career path is multifaceted and varied. And I would say that if I could give one piece of advice to young people today, it would be to be open-minded, to say yes when new, interesting experiences come your way. Because quite honestly, that's how my career has evolved, that I've been willing to say yes when I've gotten opportunities that I never would have imagined were going to show up. I would also say that it's important to know oneself. I think there's a lot of excitement and pressure around entrepreneurship right now. The idea that we all need to be entrepreneurial, and you can take classes in entrepreneurship, and it's all about breaking the status quo and creating massive change. And I realized probably in my middle of my master's degree program that I'm actually much more of what we call an intrapreneur. And I had never even heard that phrase, intrapreneur. It's a different skill set. It's the type of person that uses skills like influence and persuasion to drive change from within very large organizations. And I think that's, for me, been a critical understanding of myself, that I'm much more intrapreneurial rather than entrepreneurial.
Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. Coming up, we'll hear about Miranda's jobs in the private sector. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force Installations, Environment, and Energy at the U.S. Air Force.
So, Miranda, one of the things you mentioned in our last segment was that you came to D.C. and you started working for a nonprofit in renewable energy, and that was a kind of a pivotal point in your career. So tell us a little bit more about that, why you made that change, and then how it became that pivotal point.
Yeah, you know, in retrospect, it really was a significant point in my career. If I look back at all the decisions I've made along my career, I had the good fortune of having two opportunities, two job offers. One was in a more sort of traditional marketing sales kind of job, similar to what I had done in prior retail jobs. And the other was to work for a small nonprofit organization that brings solar power to remote parts of the developing world to really help people overcome development challenges, health, economic, educational types of things. And the nonprofit organization was going to pay me $10,000 less than the other job was. And this was at a point in my life and my career where that $10,000 per year really made a big difference. I'm not sure there's ever a point in someone's career where it doesn't, but at that point, it really made a big difference. So it was a very difficult decision for me to make. And I'll tell you, I remember distinctly, I was driving in my car and this song came on the radio called A Life Uncommon. And it really spoke to me about the importance of choosing careers that make a difference in the world. I'm sure that's not why the song was written, but that's what it said to me at that moment. And I decided to take the plunge and take the job with the nonprofit organization, really doing my heart's calling. And it was painful financially for a couple of years as I went through that, but I learned an enormous amount. And I also learned that I found myself a little bit frustrated in the nonprofit world in general. At that time, nonprofits very intentionally distanced themselves from corporations. Today, they're working together much more in partnership mode. But I'd felt that there was a lot I had learned working in the private sector that could apply to the nonprofit sector. And so that really drove my decision to go back to school and get a master's degree in business administration. Sort of a frustration with the for-profit world not thinking enough about its social and environmental impact, and a frustration with the nonprofit world not thinking enough about how to apply smart marketing and business practices to what they were doing to be more successful. And so that job was pivotal in two ways. One, it drove me to a very different master's degree path than I would have anticipated coming out of a science undergrad. And two, because it really sparked a passion for the energy industry. And my entire career since then has been built within the energy industry.
So before your current position, you had mentioned you worked for Walmart.
Indeed.
A large retail corporation. But your role was focused on sustainable renewable energy. So you brought up the private-public partnership. Was that part of your role there at Walmart?
It sure was. So, when I left Walmart, my title was Director of Sustainability for Global Renewable Energy and Sustainable Facilities, a kind of a mouthful. Walmart is in 25 countries around the world, or was at that time, maybe more today, and had a commitment to be powered by 100% renewable energy. So my job was to really work with all of the nations where Walmart had a retail presence to develop policies, procedures, and approaches to achieving that 100% renewable energy goal. Incredibly fulfilling, fun, global, international kind of job that I loved. And a big part of it was partnering with communities, policymakers, nonprofit organizations. Walmart has fabulous partnerships with several big nonprofit organizations here in the U.S. and around the world. Again, very different approach today than even 10 or 20 years ago on relationships between corporations and nonprofit organizations. Much more collaborative today and less confrontational, I would say. So it was a big part of my last job.
You had an aha moment going to work for a nonprofit. It sounds like a great job for somebody just starting out. Maybe this is a way of marrying that business background with that giving back. Would you recommend somebody to pursue a career in this today?
In working for nonprofits?
Or renewable energy?
I think the energy industry is the future. It is a booming, growing industry. Everything that we do as human beings depends on power. And frankly, if you look around the world, the first step for people to move out of poverty and have economic and health opportunities is to have clean, reliable power. So the energy industry is a fascinating industry. There are so many ways to be in it. You can be in it as an engineer. You can be in it as a business person. You can be in it as an entrepreneur, an intrapreneur. There's so many facets to the energy industry. It's an exciting place to be. It's going through a massive global transformation right now, where we're moving away from large centralized power plants to now decentralized power plants. You can imagine on people's homes, in people's backyards. It's a massive transformation in the industry.
Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. So, Miranda, I'm going to switch gears a bit. And you've worked in both the public and private sector. And one of the things that we talk about here on Women of Washington is, because we're a show about women, is invisible barriers that prevent women from reaching the highest levels of their profession, or pay discrepancies among men and women. And you've been on both sides of that private and public side of the aisle. Right now, the statistics show that women still today are only getting paid 78 cents to every dollar a man makes. The federal government is actually much better. OMB report released recently showed that the gap for women working in the federal government is nowhere near as great. So what's your perspective on that, and maybe how the federal government does versus the private sector?
Well, I don't have full visibility into all the statistics. And in the job that I'm in today, my salary is mandated by law. So I can tell you I make exactly the same as my male peers, and vice versa. I will say that there are a number of areas where, when I'm talking to younger women about developing the career that they want, developing the upward mobility that they want, I think something that we don't think about and talk about enough is very early in women's lives and women's careers, choosing the right major and choosing the right career path. The statistics show that often women choose majors and career paths that, just statistically speaking, don't have a pathway to the top. So I encourage women to really think about, what am I majoring in? And does this major limit my future opportunities? Or does it leave me the option to choose whether or not I want to keep going up or not? Let me tell you just a quick example. A couple of years ago, I was speaking down at GW, George Washington University, at the Women in Business Conference. And a young woman came up to me at the break and she said, "You know, I need your advice. I think I'm facing some gender discrimination." I said, "Okay, tell me what's going on." She said, "Well, what I really want to be is a sportscaster. I really want to be on TV talking about sports. I want to be a sportscaster, and I'm trying to get an internship this summer, but I can't even get an interview. And I think I may be getting discriminated against because I'm a woman. And I said, okay, well, tell me a little bit more. Tell me more about what's on your resume, how you're selling yourself, what's your major, what volunteer projects have you done? What do you bring into the table? And she said, well, my major is actually in sociology, and I haven't done any projects in sports casting. And I said, you know, I'm just not sure that you're facing gender discrimination. I think maybe you just don't have the right resume, and you're competing with people that are getting degrees in sports business or sports casting, and GW has a fantastic sports business program and great opportunities being here in Washington to volunteer, get internships, do all kinds of things. So I really encouraged her that you gotta have the courage to go after what you're passionate about. If what you really want to do is be a sportscaster, don't choose sociology as a degree because it feels safe, because that's what she had said. She said, I feel like that's a safe degree. I'll be able to get a job in it no matter what, if my dreams don't pan out. And I think that that's too often a common story. And I've heard it at the Air Force Academy, too, where young women would say, well, I've chosen a degree in X, Y, or Z because I'm dating a man who's going to be a fighter pilot, and I want to be able to follow him and make sure I can get a job. Well, if we want to really grow to be the most senior ranks in the organization, we need to understand which career fields position us well to do that. So women really need to think about that.
Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. Coming up, we'll ask Miranda about mentorship. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force Installations, Environment, and Energy at the U.S. Air Force. Miranda, I got to ask you a question. Now, tell us what the biggest surprise was between the difference between public and private sector. I always like to talk to executives that came in, and what was that? Oh, wow.
Well, a couple of them, and some of them were really wows, and others were, yeah, I thought that would be true, but it's even more true than I thought. So one of the big wows is in the federal government, we have incredible regulations that we have to follow for procurement and a whole host of things that I think those people out in the private sector don't fully understand. I'll tell you now when I hear my private sector friends say, oh, so much government regulation, I sort of think, oh, you should try to be a government agency because the regulations are really incredible. And I understand that because we hold taxpayer dollars in our hands. So we have a very high level of responsibility to ensure that we're being very careful. And so that's what all those regulations are about. But it does mean that our decisions are slower. Our ability to execute programs is slower. We're just not as nimble as the private sector can be. And I would also say a second thing that really surprised me is the government tends to be far more risk averse. So we just don't have the stomach for risk taking that the private sector has. And again, I understand that because we are the holders of taxpayer dollars. And so we need to be careful not to make mistakes. Our risk aversion, I think, prevents us from being as creative as we could be in solving problems sometimes.
You jumped to this pivot, as you might want to put it, into the Air Force in your third quarter, I guess, is the way I think you put it when we were talking off air. You know, would you recommend somebody else to do that? Would you do it again?
Absolutely. So the opportunity to come work for the federal government took me completely by surprise. Again, like most things in my career, it was not at all planned, frankly, not even on my radar screen. But having done it, I am absolutely convinced that I will be a better American going back out to the private sector, particularly having come to work for the military and having the opportunity to see the dedication and the competence and the passion that our federal civil servants and military bring to the job. And I'll tell you, there's nothing that breaks my heart more now than when I hear on social media or just out in the world when I hear people talk disparagingly about federal government workers, because I will tell you, in my experience, these are incredibly passionate, competent, hardworking folks who believe that they are really making a difference in the world by dedicating their lives and their careers to federal service. And quite frankly, making a heck of a lot less money than they could out in the private sector. And, you know, they're not glorious jobs.
So you said it was a surprise. So how did you end up in that chair?
Well, it was a surprise. When I was working for Walmart, Walmart is the largest private energy consumer in the nation. As it turns out, the Air Force is the largest public energy consumer in the nation. So when my position came open and the White House was looking for the type of background that they wanted, they specifically were looking for somebody that brought experience and energy, and in particularly the energy consumer side of the equation, which is a different kind of experience than if you're working for a utility or an energy developer or a technology manufacturer. I already lived in DC, so I think that probably helped late in the administration to select somebody who was in DC, but really that's how it happened. They were looking for someone with pretty specific background and expertise.
So Miranda, let's shift gears a little bit here. You know, we talk a lot on the show about mentoring because we think it's so important. So let me ask you, have you had special mentors in your career?
Of course. I have had so many mentors. In fact, I'm still in touch with many of them today, all the way back to my very first jobs out of college. Some of my early mentors, I literally still call up today to say, I'm not quite sure about which way I should turn, and have gotten some incredible pieces of advice over the years. I've had male mentors and female mentors. You know, I'll give you a couple of examples of moments that were really meaningful to me. I had one moment where I had the good fortune of being offered two different jobs, same company, two different jobs. One of the offers was a lateral move. The other offer was a promotion. And I sort of had this mindset that you never turn down a promotion, but something in my gut was telling me that I was going to be much happier in the position that was a lateral. The promotion would have been into a field that was more sort of communications and relationship oriented. Something that I had a lot of background in and was very successful in. The lateral move was much more technical in nature, much more focused on energy, but was a lateral. So it didn't come with an increase in title or an increase in pay. So I called up this mentor of mine really sort of in anguish about what I should do. And she said, okay, assuming you can, you don't need the financial bump with the promotion, she said, here's what I always do. I always think of three questions when I'm presented with job opportunities. So the first question is, in which job can I make the biggest impact for my company? Two, in which job am I going to have the most fun? Am I going to wake up every day and be most excited to go do? And three, in which job can I make the greatest impact on the world? And I'll tell you, when I asked those questions, it was a no-brainer to take the lateral position. And I use those three questions to this day when I think about opportunities.
That's great. I think when we talked, you mentioned that you had a couple of great mentorship stories. Any more that you'd like to share?
You know, I do have a couple of others. So one very quick one that I think is relevant for everyone, but particularly for women who feel like they need to do it all. I had a fabulous mentor. This was at Walmart, who had moved from a big lawyer job in a big metropolitan area back to Arkansas so that she could have a little bit more work-life balance. And one of the things she said to me was, look, Miranda, you think your job is to juggle everything, but actually your job is to figure out which balls have to stay in the air and which can drop. And that was a major aha moment for me because no one had ever said to me before, your organization will keep giving you work, keep giving you work. And you got to figure out what are the most important elements.
Miranda, you're giving such great career advice. And choosing a career can be just daunting. I mean, I have kids that have recently graduated from college, that are in college, and choosing what direction, what criteria, what characteristics for you really ascribed to your success?
Oh, gosh. I have a great sense of impatience, I will tell you. So I'm impatient to improve things. I'm impatient to get work done. And I think that that has contributed to my success. I also have a very high tolerance for ambiguity, and I'm very flexible. So I would say those three things in the career path that I've been on have been very helpful. There is very rarely a black and white answer to the kinds of problems that we're trying to solve in today's world. So being able to tolerate the fact that there may not be a yes or no answer, it may require a balance of looking at analytical details, but also bringing some instinct to problem solving. Those things have, I think, served me well over the years.
It goes back to your undergraduate degree in neuroscience and psychology that seems to help you break apart that problem.
Well, I will say that I do think that having a degree in the sciences and bringing an empirical mindset to problem solving has served me well over the years, even though I don't use my bachelor's in science on an everyday basis per se. It certainly shaped how I think about problems. And I would say that undergraduate degrees in the sciences, in business, in engineering, in law, any of those types of degrees are very practical and very applicable. And I would also say that people should focus on good writing skills. We don't talk enough about how much we write in your career. So good communication, both written, oral, and visual, is a huge, huge skill to build and will set you apart as a candidate. If you can go to an interview with examples of good communication skills, written, oral, and visual, makes a big difference from the hiring manager's perspective.
Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. Coming up, we'll ask Miranda about work-life balance. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force Installations, Environment, and Energy at the U.S. Air Force.
So, Miranda, you've had such a successful career. With all of the competing priorities that women, working women, have in their lives, many of the women that we talk to have had to make some difficult choices. And sometimes the decisions that we're faced with have either delayed or dampened our success or sent us in different directions than we originally planned. So, Miranda, it sounds like you've managed to work things out pretty well in terms of balance, whatever we call balance. Are there any particular strategies that you have found successful in your life, in your career, that you've used?
Well, I've talked to you a little bit about building your own village. The other thing that I've made a commitment to is traveling with my family whenever I can. And I think I mentioned earlier that I travel for work anywhere from a quarter to half the time. And that's a pretty significant time away from home. When my daughter was very young, so 0 to 2, when they're still young enough, they can ride on your lap for free and you don't have to buy a plane ticket. And before she was in a school environment where she really had to be at school, she traveled with me almost 100% of my trips. I spent a lot of time between Washington and Arkansas. Of course, I was working for Walmart at the time. And she traveled with me, and we had a babysitter down in Arkansas. We found a woman who was able to be flexible and affordable, and she came with me. And to this day, during the summers, if I can make it work, using frequent flyer miles or scraping up pennies wherever I can, I do try to include my daughter and my husband when he can make it work as well to join me and travel with me. And that really does make a big difference. And I feel like my daughter also is getting to see her mom work and getting to see what it means to be a working woman.
And I think a lot of times when we talk to women, what get sacrificed are ourselves and the things that we like to do. Are there things that you like to do that you just have not been able to find time for?
In one word, yes, absolutely. There are hobbies and life passions that I've quite literally had to put on the back burner and that I hope to and plan to get back to at a later time in my life when I have more time, because the cold, hard reality is there's only 24 hours in a day. And unless we don't want to sleep, there's just really not time to do everything, to have a meaningful career, be a wonderful spouse, be a great parent, get enough exercise to take care of ourselves physically and emotionally, and then get enough sleep at night, because more and more evidence tells us that we're not sleeping enough. And notice I didn't even mention hobbies and pastimes and reading books and watching movies. So without question, some things get put on the back burner. I'll tell you another story. You asked me earlier about mentors, and I had a wonderful boss. Many of my mentors have been my bosses as well. I had a wonderful boss, and one day I was bemoaning to her about a difficulty I was having with my three-year-old, who at the time literally every day was asking me, "Mommy, are you going to pick me up from preschool today?" And I had never been the primary picker-upper, so to speak. We have a wonderful, wonderful nanny who does most of the pickups. And so I was sort of wondering aloud why it is that even though she had no precedent to think that I would be the one picking her up from preschool, she asked me every day, and it was breaking my heart. And my boss slash mentor said to me, "You know, I think you should just pick her up every Friday. Just make it your thing. Fridays will be the day Mommy picks her up from school, and work can handle it. You just set the parameter. On Fridays, I'm going to pick, be out from 12 to 2, and then I'm going to be back," and set the parameter. And I did that. And you know what? It was absolutely transformative, because Fridays became a special day. And my little three-year-old, instead of asking me who's picking me up, would just ask, "What day of the week is it?" Because she knew that Fridays, when I was not traveling, were going to be our day.
So many women mid-career are leaving the Air Force. We had Secretary James on not too long ago, and she's trying to push some initiatives to help those parents that are dealing with some of the conflicts of parenting and working, especially some of the forward deployed positions. Do you have any advice for those people out there who are trying to balance it, how to do it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's even more complicated for military families. Dual working military families, incredibly complicated, because they move every couple of years. So they don't have extended family nearby to help them. They don't have the opportunity to create the village the way many of us have done. In fact, I would say that's a crucial, crucial piece of advice for families that are having children and balancing careers, is to build that village of extended friends and family to help. And that's really difficult for dual working families who are moving around a lot. And I would say that I have been fortunate enough in my career, and I was in the private sector when my daughter was very young, that I actually scaled back my work to 3/4 time for about a year during that first year of her life. So I worked Monday through Thursday, and everybody knew that I wouldn't be in the office on Friday. And that allowed me to maintain my foot, actually really both feet, still in my career, while also having that one day a week to really dedicate to my family and to my child.
So you have always had a nanny, and I also have four children, and there's nothing worse than getting home and finding out that your daycare situation has just been turned upside down. They've taken another job, or they're moving back to their home state. So have you ever faced anything like that, and how did you deal with it?
Well, I have to tell you, I've been very lucky, because we've had one nanny since my baby was 2 months old.
Wow.
And she really is a part of our family. Now, that's not to say that she has six children of her own, actually. So that's not to say that I haven't gotten the call that one of her kids is sick, or she is sick, or the car broke down, or whatever. That life happens. And I'll tell you, we have very intentionally built a village. So we have very good friends who have children the same age as my daughter. Our nanny has built networks with their nannies. And essentially, we've had to create what we all once had naturally with grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and extended family that all created a natural village. Many of us don't have that anymore. So my husband and I have pretty intentionally created that. And that's really how we've handled it. On occasion, one of us will just have to stay home. But for the most part, we've found ways to balance it. We had a big snow day one year. And I remember I called up one of one of the families in our little network. And I said, hey, I'll take the kids all morning if you'll take them all afternoon. And that's what we did. And we each worked from home for half the day and were able to support each other to keep some work and some snow day.
Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. So, Miranda, you've done the private sector, you've done nonprofit, you've done public sector now in your current role with the Air Force. So what's next for Miranda?
Oh, that's a darn good question. Why don't we talk again a year from now and maybe I'll know.
Do you think? Absolutely. And, you know, especially I feel almost silly asking that question after you've said that one of your kind of guiding principles is being open to different opportunities. But there's, in all seriousness, are there things that you feel like you haven't done that you would like to do, you know, kinds of work that you haven't had a chance to do that you would like to?
I love the energy industry. I have every intention of staying in the energy industry in some form or fashion. There are so many exciting things happening in the industry. Most of my experience is on the consumer side, as we discussed earlier. So, you know, maybe an opportunity working on the developer side or the manufacturer side or the utility side could be interesting. But I got to tell you, I'm pretty open. I'm pretty open. My criteria are really, I want to make sure that I'm staying in a field where I feel like I'm contributing to the betterment of the world in some form or fashion, where my skills and my approach to work will make a difference, and that I'm fairly compensated. You know, those are pretty broad criteria, but that's how I view opportunities. And we'll see what turns up. The president has asked us to run through the tape and not start thinking about what's next. So that's really what I'm doing. I'm keeping my head down and focusing on getting through the end of the administration.
Miranda, you've given us such good career advice, life balance advice, daycare advice. but I gotta ask you, if you were to go back to your younger self, maybe as you were just graduating from college, what pieces of advice would you want her to have the level of success you've enjoyed today or even further?
You know, I think I would tell my younger self to relax a little bit and enjoy the ride. I think I worried, as many young people do, about the future and knowing what was in my 3-year and 5-year and 10-year plan and feeling like I had to have the next decade or two figured out. And I think I would go back and tell her, don't worry, it's going to work out.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Ms. Miranda Ballantyne, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force. Thank you so much for sharing your inspirational story with us today, Miranda. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.